910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. A judge has ordered former Trump advisor Steve Bannon to report to prison by July 1st to serve his four-month-long contempt of Congress sentence related to the January 6th investigation. In the felony gun trial of Hunter Biden, prosecutors called Hallie Biden, the widow of Beau Biden, who also had a romantic relationship with his brother Hunter Biden after Beau's death. Hunter Biden is accused of lying about his drug use on a form when he purchased a firearm. ABC's Olivia Rubin is in Delaware.
What they have not yet done is get anyone on the stand to say that they saw Hunter Biden using drugs during that specific time when he owned the gun, which is so key here, and that is exactly what the defense has been drilling into. Every time a witness takes the stand, they say, oh, you saw him using drugs in March of 2018, but what about October 2018 when he owned the gun? Did you see him using drugs then?
In Normandy, France today, President Biden honoring veterans and allied forces for the 80th D-Day anniversary. This is ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News. Your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The former warden at the state prison in Waupun faces prison time himself. Randall Hepp is charged with misconduct in public office after four inmates died on his watch in a year's time. Eight former prison staffers are charged with felony abuse. Dodge County Sheriff Dale Schmidt.
There must be accountability for the actions and inactions of state employees. As the sheriff, I am angered at how these men were treated and how they died.
One of the four deaths is ruled a homicide. He died of malnourishment after his water was turned off. The former superintendent of Wisconsin's largest school district is getting $160,000 to walk away. Milwaukee's Keith Posley is quitting at the end of the month after failing to report required financial information to the state. I'm Terry Bell, Civic Media News. Now here's what you need to know closer to home.
For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly. State park officials are celebrating the 100-year anniversary of the Jay Cook State Park Swinging Bridge. According to a Northern News Now report, the bridge was first built in 1924 and stood roughly 18 feet above the St. Louis River. Over the years, floods have destroyed the bridge and forced its reconstruction to be raised a few feet higher each time. It was last destroyed in the worst recorded flood on the St. Louis River in 2012 and rebuilt after 16 months. Officials are hoping to add an all-terrain track chair by 2025. As the school year winds down, Lake Superior Elementary students and teachers are preparing for the permanent closure of their school. According to a Northern News Now report, Principal Rick Flaherty says that all 30 members of the staff who intended to continue working have been able to find another job either inside or outside the district, and class sizes will remain mostly the same after consolidation. The Superior School Board voted to close the school in April of 2023, but haven't decided what to do with the building yet. And that's what you need to know. For WBZH News, I'm James Kelly.
Milwaukee gets swept in Philadelphia. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with sports. For the third straight day, the Brewers' bats stayed quiet, and Milwaukee was shut out by the Phillies 2-0 on Wednesday. It's the first time the Brewers have been swept this season. Manager Pat Murphy says the Brewers are right there with the best teams in baseball.
Every game could have went either way. Taking these on the chin here against best record in the National League, like, hopefully that sits in the right place for these guys, and they understand, hey, we're right there.
Milwaukee was outscored 7-2 in the series. They'll have a day off before heading to play Detroit for three games against the Tigers starting Friday. Tonight is the first game of the NBA Finals. The Boston Celtics host the Dallas Mavericks in the best-of-seven series. Today is the start of the state high school softball tournament in Madison. You can follow along on the WIAA's website. The Packers wrap up OTAs today ahead of next week's mandatory minicamp. Training camp opens up next month. For Civic Media Sports, I'm Jimmy Cusca.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Mainly cloudy and cooler, as high temperatures only rise to the low 60s. And we've got those feisty winds whipping out of the northwest, gusting up to 35 miles per hour. And spotty showers do have a chance to sprinkle in this afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. Right now, it's 55 degrees.
I love my kids so much. I once sat for 3 hours in the cold rain to watch her soccer team lose by 18 goals.
I love my kids so much. I once used a tube to suck snot out of her stuffed nose at 3 a.m.
You win.
Love your kids? Love them enough to make sure they're in the right car seat. From toddlers to tweens, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat to find the right seat for their age and size. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Earl Ingram.
Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. You say what?
I've been marching since I was 17. I'm 74. And women need to get out. You need to vote because you don't want to go back to 1950 where you weren't allowed a credit card, where you weren't allowed to purchase a car or a home. These are things that are at stake.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Pete Schwabba.
On the next Nightlight, Civic Media's Stuart J. Waddles joins me to talk about the best kids shows, Summerfest and Ferris Bueller. And I play some highlights from my visit to a recent Bigfoot convention.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, weeknights 7 till 9.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Albaugh Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Albaugh.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Albaugh, along with our producer, Mr. Aaron Zommers. It is the 6th of June, a Thursday, 2024, 6 past the hour of 12 noon. It is a great day to be a Wisconsinite, a great day to be an American, as we bring you a special tribute this hour on the remembering the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Good afternoon, everybody here high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square. Going to be joined in just a bit here by John Mino, the co-host of Mino and the Mayor on our station in Green Bay, WGBW. You can hear their program every morning beginning at 6 o'clock in Green Bay and on WISS Oshkosh Air Support. He has put together, through his work with veterans, just a remarkable number of firsthand accounts of veterans from Wisconsin in particular. And after talking to a lot of these people, he has put this together in first-person form. We're going to be playing some of these today and accounts of D-Day in the words of Wisconsin veterans. It is remarkable. We cannot wait to play some of these for you today and also to talk to John Mino about how he came upon this project and his work with veterans as well. Also a great cut from the incomparable Andy Rooney, longtime correspondent for CBS's 60 Minutes, himself a World War II veteran. Going to play that for you in just a little bit. But want to begin the program here today with the words of President Joe Biden, who traveled to France and who was at Normandy today with French President Macron to remember, to mark the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Here are just a little bit of President Biden's remarks earlier today from France.
Theirs has always been the story of America. Just walk the rows of this cemetery as I have. Nearly 10,000 heroes buried side by side, officers and enlisted, immigrants and native-born, different races, different faiths, but all Americans. All served with honor when America and the world needed them most. Millions back home did their part as well. From coast to coast, Americans found countless ways to pitch in. They understood our democracy is only as strong as all of us make it together. The men who fought here became heroes, not because they were the strongest or toughest or most fiercest, although they were, but because they were given an audacious mission, knowing, every one of them knew, the probability of dying was real. But they did it anyway. They knew, beyond any doubt, there are things that are worth fighting and dying for. Freedom is worth it. Democracy is worth it. America is worth it. The world is worth it. Then, now, and always.
The war in Europe didn't end for another 11 months. But here, the tide turned in our favor. Here, we proved the forces of liberty are stronger than the forces of conquest. Here, we proved that the ideals of our democracy are stronger than any army or combination of armies in the entire world. We proved something else here as well, the unbreakable unity of the Allies.
President Joe Biden this morning from Normandy and in France there, marking the 80th anniversary of D-Day. It is certainly a day that should be remembered in solemnness, in reverence, and also for the great sacrifice of so many of American, not just the soldiers, sailors, airmen, Marine, Coast Guardsmen, soldiers, but also their families, who, of course, had to continue on, many without spouses, brothers, sisters. It had an effect on the entire country. Joining us now via phone, live from Green Bay, the co-host of Mino and the Mayor on our great stations in Green Bay, WGBW, and in Oshkosh, WISS, John Mino. Mino, you guys have one of the best programs on our network, in my opinion, because you're entertaining Wow. and you're just a heck of a lot of fun. But also, I think what you put together, what we're about to play here, and your work with veterans just shows your chops in terms of broadcasting, but also just how much you care about the community. Thank you for joining us on this 80th anniversary of D-Day.
Oh, it's an honor and a pleasure to join you, and thank you for what you said. That's very nice of you.
No, it's absolutely true. And again, you guys have a great program. You kind of kid each other. I've had the honor of being on a couple of times. You've been on our show. We've taken the show on the road to Green Bay, and it's just a heck of a lot of fun. But tell us how you came to work with veterans, John Mino. And in this, we're going to play some of these clips that you put together, this project of first-person stories. How'd you come upon the project?
You know, honestly, it started, I don't even know what year it was, like 1998 or something. And I was doing a local radio show, a little AM radio show that probably got within like 20 miles. Mm-hmm. And I went to a local VFW on Veterans Day, and we're going to interview veterans. And I've always been a history buff, love war movies like we all did, and, you know, read all the books. And after the show, I actually had breakfast with a bunch of World War II veterans. And they were just telling stories, and I'm thinking to myself, holy cow. I mean, I've read a lot of books on World War II veterans, and here's we got a group of guys, you know, right around Green Bay, and their stories are, you know, really compelling mm-hmm. and I think important. And I just started, I said, could I just interview you? I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I interviewed him, and then I said, do you know anybody else? And he put me on to another guy, and that was the start of the four books I've written. The first one was 100% Frontlines, it was called, on World War II veterans, the European theater and the South Pacific. Then the other one was called ETL, European Theater of Operations. The next one is called the Pacific. And then the next one is called 50 Strong, which is World War II, Korea, and Vietnam. But I guess what I'm saying is it was like the most amazing thing to sit there with these elderly gentlemen who, you know, maybe might have been, you know, a mail carrier or worked at the hardware store or whatever. I just wanted to bring their stories to life that this, you know, 76-year-old guy who's whatever at the time, you know, waiting on you someplace, stormed the beaches of Normandy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was in sports all my life, covering sports. And it's like, you know, we take these guys that are 23 years old and whatever, and, okay, they're a good football player, basketball player, and we idolize them, but here's these normal guys that lived on the block from you, and they did things that made an impact on the rest of our nation's history.
Right.
And they never received the accolades.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm not saying I gave them all the accolades, but it's just, I just want to do my part for our local guys. And that's where it began, just from the sincerity of sitting and talking to these guys over breakfast.
I think it's fantastic. We're going to play one of these right now, and we're going to come back and talk to John Mino from Mino and the Mayor here at Civic Media, doing great work. Here is the first person story of one of the great heroes that was there on D-Day 80 years ago.
It was still dark when they woke us. Dark, foggy, windy, just a dreary cold morning. They fed us breakfast and told us to report to our debarking stations. I remember I was nervous as I've ever been about just about anything in my life. The sea was rough as heck. Both the ship and the landing craft were bobbing up and down. The LC would come up to about 6 feet from the rail and then drop right down to 15 to 20 feet. I can still remember hanging on to that landing net, watching the guy on the LC who would tell you when to jump. He said, go. So I jumped. But either he mistimed it or I did, because I fell about 8 feet and landed flat on my back. A couple of guys grabbed me and dragged me away before somebody else came down on top of me. I think we had close to 50 guys in there, just sort of jammed in no particular order. We circled around for a long time, waiting to group up with the other boats. It was starting to get light when we finally got the signal to head towards shore. We were about 2 miles out. We still didn't hear any shelling coming our way, but we started to see bodies floating in the water around us. They were the frogmen who had gotten in earlier to clean the mines from the water and obstacles on the beach. We still couldn't see the actual beach over the top of the ramp, just the bluff beyond the beach. The closer we got to shore, the sicker guys got. We were bouncing up and down. Guys were getting sick as hell. This is the only time in my life I didn't get sick. I honestly think I was too scared to get sick. I'm not kidding. I was too worried about what was up ahead, especially after seeing how rough those frogmen had it. They had me switch places with some guys. I'd been in the back where it wasn't as bad. They had me move to the front. I didn't really have any choice. I had to do it. But I knew now that I'd be one of the first ones out when the ramp went down. We're all hunkered down below the sides of the LC when the pilot yelled out, "Here it is, ramp going down." As soon as that ramp started going down, I saw how far out we were. I couldn't believe it. We'd expected the water to be knee-deep, but I jumped out and went right down to my armpits. Five or six of us jumped right out and struggled to keep our heads above water. It was only a couple of seconds before a German machine gun found us. They had us zeroed in. The bullets were going over our heads, but the rest of the guys in the boat, the ones right behind us trying to get off, they didn't have a chance. There was no place for them to go. We tried to get as low in the water as we could. A lot of those guys were the top officers from the headquarters unit, veterans of other landings. There wasn't a thing they could do. Some tried going over the sides. If I had gotten sick, like the rest of them, if I hadn't been moved to the front of the boat, I know what would have happened. I just wanted to make myself as small a target as possible. There's a lot of water and a lot of targets, and you just wanted to make yourself disappear. The big machine guns seemed to zero in on the boats that hadn't been unloaded. When they found one, they stayed on it just long enough to mow the troops down. Those poor guys didn't even have a chance to fire a shot. Richard Gorey, United States Army, Appleton, D-Day, 1944.
The story of Richard Gorey from Appleton, Wisconsin, an American hero as told by John Mino. John Mino, co-host of Mino and the Mayor on WGBW and WISS every morning from 6 until 9, joins us. John, got about a minute left. Can you stay with us through the break as well, John? Are you able to?
Absolutely. Whatever you need, buddy.
I appreciate it. 45 seconds here, John. Just again, that you said it before that we played it, but these are guys who grew up down the street and they're American heroes.
Yep. That's exactly right. Richard then became a principal of a middle school in Appleton, had a great life, but he never forgot those days. And in my books, not trying to push my books, but
no, please.
He talks about he turned 19 years old sitting on the ledge of Omaha Beach, soaking wet, and thinking to myself, my goodness gracious, where am I? Think about when you were 18,
yeah, right.
And you just went through that.
I barely knew how to drive my car at 18, I think. John Mino, you're fantastic. He's going to stay with us on the other side as we commemorate and remember the 80th anniversary of D-Day here on the Todd Allball Show. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Are you and your family weather ready? I'm Terry Barr. Wisconsin weather is ever changing, and all of us with Civic Media believe awareness can make a difference. Our weather ready stories will offer the information you need. Here's meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
We are experiencing a stretch of severe weather in Wisconsin. 22 tornadoes were reported over 4 different days. This includes the strongest one that ripped through Evansville area, marking the first time that a tornado ever touched down during the month of February in Wisconsin. Now, we typically average 23 tornadoes during an entire year and recorded 21 in 2023. But we've already surpassed last year, and what's considered to be the most severe weather months of June and July are still ahead of us. One more thing, forecasters are predicting a shift to a La Nina climate pattern in July, meaning our severe weather season could be longer and more damaging than ever. Information you need to be sure you and your family are always weather ready. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot.
The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
Welcome back to the Tom Lobel Show, a special edition on this 80th anniversary of D-Day, as we stop, commemorate, and remember those American heroes from 80 years ago. President Biden in Normandy, France, giving remarks earlier. We played some of that. We'll bring you a little bit more a little bit later on. Also remarks by the legendary Andy Rooney himself, a World War II veteran. But right now we are honored to be joined by John Mino, co-host of Mino and the Mayor, every morning 6 until 9 on WGBW and WISS. In Green Bay and Oshkosh, respectively. John, you and the mayor do a great show up there, but right now what we're talking about is your great work on putting together, you've written these books on veterans, but you've also put together these first-person stories that we're going to play throughout the day, and we appreciate you allowing us to do that. John, what's something that you came away with, or you felt, or you learned after having done this project that you didn't know going in?
Absolutely normal guys. Absolutely the most normal guys you can ever imagine. We watch the movies with the John Wayne and almost like superheroes that we all watched as kids, you know, The Longest Day and some of those movies. And these are just young guys. They graduated from high school. Some of them, you know, the number one thing, I'll be honest with you, is so many of them, when they got drafted in the Army, were excited because they lived through the Depression.
Right.
And they, you know, they were literally almost like starving. And some of them told me they had to write to their mothers and dads and say, you're not going to believe this. We get three meals a day, all we can eat, 7 days a week.
Yeah.
This is unbelievable. They went through such hard times right before this that they were like, oh, yeah. Let's go do it. It's better than what we've been dealing
with.
And they're just normal guys.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, listen to another one of these, John. We'll talk to you afterwards on the other side of another piece. So stand by. This is another one of the first-person stories from heroes from D-Day 80 years ago, put together and narrated by our very own John Mino.
You never knew when the call would come, but all of a sudden, one day, we were told to head out. We knew it had to be the big one because of all the activity around us. We hadn't seen anything like that before. We got into formation with all these other ships, thousands and thousands of them. We were absolutely amazed by the whole thing. I was on the bridge of the ship. It was a very dark morning, just dark and gloomy. The sea was actually rather calm. As far as you could see all around you, there was nothing but airplanes and ships on their way to Normandy. The battle wagons would sit a few miles offshore and send shells over our heads to the beach. Then there were destroyers. My God, just tons and tons of ships and materials. We headed to Normandy and sat there until they needed us. Our cargo consisted of troops, trucks, heavy trucks, tanks, jeeps, just all kinds of things. We would drive the vehicles right up onto the beach from our lower deck. When we got close to shore, it really started getting bad. We didn't hit any mines, luckily. On one of the many trips we made that day, I was watching from the main deck. We were in a two-ship column. I'm looking at the ship next to us. All of a sudden, it must have hit a mine because it just exploded and started to sink. We couldn't stop. We had to just keep moving towards the beach. The only time we ever stopped to help was when we came upon a Liberty ship that was sinking. It was loaded with tanks and everything else. They must have been torpedoed or hit a mine because it was severely damaged. There wasn't anything you could do to save that ship. All we could do was take guys off theirs and put them on ours. Those poor Army guys that were on our ship, oh boy. The doors would open and they would climb out. Those guys were scared. We were scared too, but those guys were more scared of being on our ship than on dry land. They knew ships were being blown up all around us. They wanted to get out and take their chances on shore. I wouldn't have traded places with those guys for anything, and those guys wouldn't have traded places with us. Everybody was scared to death. It didn't matter where you were located. It was terrible. Just terrible. They were firing at our ships. Those were terrible things that could destroy just about anything. Our guys just had to go up, kill the Germans, knock out the guns. Our destroyers would come in close and fire the heck out of them, but a lot of the destroyers got shot up too. So you had people getting killed both ways all the time. You really couldn't tell who was winning or who was losing. It was just a mass of firing. We saw ships sunk, guys drowning, dead guys floating in the water. It looked like those poor guys on the beach were in terrible shape. Just terrible. Once we unloaded our cargo, we'd load up with the wounded troops. We made many trips, many back and forth from the French coast to England. We had three or four doctors on our ship, and they had an operating room. You felt so bad for the poor guys they were working on. They maybe had an arm blown off, but they were just fighting to stay alive. The doctors would have cut off what was left of something and throw the parts over the side. There were parts and everything floating in the water. It was just a terrible, terrible thing to see. We had put those poor wounded guys on stretchers, three or four high along the walls of our tank decks and attached to the bulkhead. You just felt terrible for those guys on D-Day at Normandy. Richard Stoltz, United States Navy.
The story of Richard Stoltz, as told by our very own John Mino, co-host of Mino and the Mayor on WGBW and WISS in Green Bay and Oshkosh every morning from 6 until 9. Also an author. Mino, again, just outstanding work here. And again, when I go to movies, there's not too many that actually physically move me. But when I saw Saving Private Ryan, I got ill.
Yeah.
And that's just a movie. And when you hear what you just, firsthand account, that's the real thing.
That's the thing. Steven Spielberg and that, they wanted to make it as authentic as humanly possible. And almost every situation in that movie was based on transcripts mm-hmm. from World War II veterans on D-Day. So that wasn't Hollywood, that part. Mm-hmm. Everything that you saw in that movie, in that early scene, getting to the beach on Omaha, or getting to the land at Omaha Beach, those were all based on actual things that D-Day veterans described to them. So wow. That kind of puts it in perspective. And even my World War II vets on D-Day that have talked to me about that, they think that movie is the most realistic aspect of any war movie ever.
Wow. No, it's great work here, Mino. We've got about 2 minutes left or so. Again, any takeaways that you'd like to share with the audience here just from this project that you put together, things you think people should know?
Well, the number one thing is a lot of these guys did not want to talk about it. I mean, when you go through something like that, it's so traumatic, and they really tried to bury it, because even in their dreams and different things, those things would come out. So I know I was like almost like 30 years or more before I interviewed them, but a lot of them said they couldn't have talked about it for a long time. Mm-hmm. And you know, we talk about post-traumatic stress. And I've dealt with a lot of, you know, I went to Iraq a couple of times in Afghanistan, and I deal with it. But those guys had no treatment. And those guys that went through those things, I mean, they were our grandfathers, our uncles, maybe our dads. They suffered in silence with what they went through. And that's one of the reasons I want to just, you know, the accolades towards those guys. They just kept quiet and suffered quietly.
Well, John Mino, we appreciate your work. We're going to play more of the stories that you're narrating, of these real-life stories, all the research you put into this. I appreciate it so much. We're going to play more of these throughout our show today. You can find you and the mayor, Jim Schmidt, every morning from 6 until 8 on WGBW, WISS, Green Bay, Oshkosh. Mino and the mayor, we appreciate your work, John. Thank you so much, and thanks for helping us remember D-Day.
My pleasure. Thank you for reaching out on this. I really appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you on short notice. Don't hang up, John, because Zombers is going to get the info on the book. We'll make sure that goes in the show notes as well. Stay tuned now. More on the other side. This is a special edition of the All Balls Show on the Civic Media Ready Network.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
The dairy sector took a hit yesterday, and these up and down swings continue. I'm Stephanie Hoff with the Midwest Farm Report. Ryan Yonkman joins us. He's vice president with EverAg. He breaks down the outside elements that are putting dairy on this roller coaster.
The story behind that is really when you take into account how hard we ran, how high we got, we had completely converged on global prices and actually to some degree were premium. Basically became the most expensive product in the world. And when we do that, you always bring on the risk of headwinds with pullbacks like this and that, like, hey, we're definitely not exporting cheese. You can certainly spook end user demand when you go from a pretty cheap price to all of a sudden something historically fairly high. So this pullback here, not one of major concern, but it is one when you look at, again, we are no longer a discount to the globe.
Ryan Yonkman along with us, vice president at EverAg. You can find them online at ever.ag. We'll take a look at what our Class 3 milk prices are doing next.
Boston, Plymouth, Martha's Vineyard, and the beautiful National Seashore. Those are just a few of the things you'll enjoy going along with me on our next farm adventure. I'm Pam Yonke, and we're headed east for our captivating Cape Cod tour, October 19th through the 26th. Everybody gets a chance to enjoy those natural highlights, but then we also take you deeper, visiting a dairy farm just outside of Boston, where they'll tell us about all their operations. Then out at Martha's Vineyard, we'll find out about alpaca breeding and how they're selectively finding animals with certain traits for high fiber production. We'll visit a cranberry bog in action, and remember, they don't do it like we do on the East Coast. And of course, enjoy mouthwatering dinners all along the way. Go to holidayvacations.com and enter keyword Pam for more information and to watch a free travel video, or call 888-557-1020 for a free brochure.
Commodity markets are trading higher across the board midday on a Thursday. This is as traders start to analyze the USDA export sales data released earlier today. After a big downward swing yesterday, the Class 3 milk contracts are now trading higher. The July contract is up 7 cents at $20.22 a hundredweight. The August contract is up 16 cents at $20.52 a hundredweight. Corn and soybeans are seeing double-digit gains. Cash corn is up 12 and a quarter cents at 451 and a half. December new crop corn is up 10 and a quarter cents at 469 and a quarter. Cash soybeans are up 24 and three quarter cents at $12.02 a bushel. November new crop soybeans are up 19 and three quarter cents at 1170 and a quarter. And July new crop wheat is trading up a penny at 647 and three quarters. That's your market update midday on a Thursday. For the Midwest Farm Report, I'm Stephanie Hoff.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Mainly cloudy and cooler, as high temperatures only rise to the low 60s. And we've got those feisty winds whipping out of the northwest, gusting up to 35 miles per hour. And spotty showers do have a chance to sprinkle in this afternoon. I'm meteorologist Brittany Merlot. It's 60 degrees at our studios.
Medicare loses $60 billion annually to fraud. June 3rd through the 9th is Medicare Fraud Prevention Week, focusing on the actions everyone can take to prevent Medicare fraud, errors, and abuse. Learn how to protect yourself and your loved ones by liking and following Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol on Facebook. Then visit our website, smpwi.org. For information and advice, remember, Wisconsin Senior Medicare Patrol.
Whether you own a local business or a global one, you're always looking for ways to position your operation to create opportunities and move on them faster. With Bank of America, you get access to experts, award-winning insights, and business solutions so powerful, you'll make every move matter, locally and globally. Visit bankofamerica.com/bankingforbusiness to learn more. What would you like the power to do? Copyright 2024 Bank of America N.A.
Pat Kreitlow.
Friday morning on Up North News Radio, Jennifer Schulze talks about how New York City's big papers have become infected with a nasty case of Joe Biden derangement syndrome.
Up North News with Pat Kreitlow. Weekday mornings starting at 6.
Woo!
Welcome back to the Title Ball Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is now 34 past the hour of 12 noon on this Thursday, June 6, 2024. A special hour here remembering and commemorating the 80th anniversary of D-Day on the beaches of Normandy in France. I want to thank so much our friend and colleague, co-host of Mino and the Mayor, John Mino, for coming on the show on rather short notice. And also, thanks, Mr. Zomers. Help me out, Mr. Zomers. Anastasia, or was it Anastasia, one that our producer up in Green Bay that sent that word out?
It was Amanda.
I'm sorry. Amanda was the one. And so thanks to the entire team here at Civic and Todd Michaels as well. We put all that together. I mean, it was Mino's work was all done prior, but we made this all happen kind of on the fly here this afternoon. I so appreciate the entire team's help, because what John Mino has done in he's bringing history to all of us. He's saving history. I mean, there's no way we can fully appreciate what has happened in the past, nor try to avoid having that happen again in the future, if we don't hear and remember these stories firsthand from the men, and I say men because it was men fighting in the day, who were there on D-Day. And so thanks to John Mino for coming on the show, and thanks for all of his great work, not just in compiling these important stories, but also for his great work in the Green Bay area, helping out all of our veterans.
And if you want to read more stories like this and you want to check out his books, currently the best place to find them is on Amazon. And if you just search John Mino, you'll be able to find it. Otherwise, I did put a link to his most recent book, 50 Strong, in the podcast description.
Fantastic. Appreciate that. And Mino, by the way, it doesn't look the way it sounds as far as spelling. It's M as in Mary, A I-N-O. So Mino is M-A-I-N-O, John Mino of Mino and the Mayor. A great show, by the way. 6 to 8 every morning on Green Bay's WGBW and Oshkosh's WISS. Mino talked about it, and we were talking a little bit about this. And I think most people have seen it, but if you've never seen the movie Saving Private Ryan, great producer and director Steven Spielberg, it is worth a watch, particularly today, or at this time on the 80th anniversary of D-Day. Like I say, one of the most powerful movies I've ever seen. And one of the stars of the movie, Tom Hanks, is also in Normandy and appearing on CNN with Christiane Amanpour. And there's going to be a special broadcast tonight on CNN International and also on your local PBS station, in which Christiane Amanpour is there in France commemorating the 80th edition of D-Day, anniversary of D-Day. And she has this great interview with Tom Hanks. We have a teaser, about a minute and a half of this. We're going to play it for you. If you'd like to call in with your thoughts and remembrances of your own on D-Day, 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. But let's go now, Mr. Zomers, to this cut from CNN and PBS's Christiane Amanpour with Tom Hanks, star of Steven Spielberg's Saving Private Ryan, which centers around Normandy and D-Day.
I remember when we were shooting, and by the way, this is one of the reasons Steven Spielberg wanted to make the movie. He said, finally, I'll be able to do with film technology, I'll actually be able to capture what happened on Omaha Beach, and here's how I'm going to do it. First, it's going to take 3 weeks. And secondly, it's going to be every single day. And third, we're going to have all kinds of stuff going off. And fourth, in between there, we'll make some sort of movie. At the same time, we're trying to load it up with as much authentic, and I wanted to use the word again, verisimilitude, as we can. Okay, that's our job as filmmakers. It's also our job as lay historians, because for good or for bad, that movie is a document that has to accurately reflect the tenor of that day. And I'd like to think that we did it. And hearing it from a number of people said, as confusing as that is, well, multiply that by, we did not have the smell of cordite or burning flesh or, you know, blood on the sand. But we did have some version of whatever you can get out of a motion picture. I think we captured it. And to Steven's credit, and I will also go along with the audience's credit as well. they were willing to suspend whatever disbelief of it and say, I've always, if you've ever wondered what it was like, that's as close as somebody in Davenport, Iowa, or Oakland, California, or Minneapolis, Minnesota was going to get to that.
That's Tom Hanks on Christiane Amanpour. I apologize. Mrs. Amanpour sent me a note that said he was going to record it and boost it. Of course, I didn't read that. So that's on me, the low quality of the cuts. I apologize for that. But I think most people are able to hear it and get the gist of it there. And again, what Tom Hanks is saying there, one of the stars in Saving Private Ryan about D-Day, is exactly what John Minow had just said as well, that Steven Spielberg, the great, not only a movie maker, but I'll say a historian. I mean, Saving Private Ryan and also Schindler's List, also a Spielberg film, are in my top five films ever made. And it's because of the deep research and devotion to authenticity of Spielberg, of how he made these movies, saying, we're only doing it if we do history and those who perish justice. And it's a powerful, powerful movie. 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. Want to go to Bob in Waukesha. Bob, thanks for calling in. What say you?
Well, I've watched the movie Private Ryan, and watching it, I had tears in my eyes. That was a suicide mission, and those poor guys, they had delayed that mission for 2 days because they couldn't get the planes up in the air because of the there was clouds. It was either foggy, but the planes wouldn't have done any good. Mm-hmm. And finally, the third day, they said, we got to go, and they went. And it was just like shooting ducks in a barrel, for crying mm-hmm. out loud. Mm-hmm. It was just it just was horrible. And those men knew when they got off of those boats that they were going to die, but they ran up that hill anyways. And, you know, when Trump was in France, he was supposed to go to that cemetery in Normandy. And he didn't want to go because he didn't want to get his hair wet. It was raining. And he said, besides, those men are nothing but suckers and losers. I don't know how that man can live with himself, and I do not know how anybody could vote for him, much less how any veteran could vote for him.
Yeah. Appreciate the call, Bob. Thanks for your remembrances. Thanks for your thoughts. 855-752-4842. 855-752-4842. If we can, Mr. Zomers, can we do one more of the clips from John Minow? Are those set to go? So these are from John Minow of Minow and the Mayor. Can be heard every morning, 6 until 9 on WGBW, WISS, Green Bay, and Oshkosh, respectively. And you say, well, Tom, you don't live there. Well, that's fine. No problem at all. You can download the Civic Media app, and that's the beauty of it, you understand. For free, you can listen to all these stations and get all these great programs right delivered to your device, your iPhone, your Android device, or what have you. Again, on Green Bay and Oshkosh, 6 until 9, every morning, Minow and the Mayor. We're going to take another listen to, again, these are stories that have been told first person to Minow, and he put this to music, and he took the words of actual D-Day veterans and tells their story. He'll tell you the name and the hometown at the end of the piece. Once again, one of the first person D-Day remembrances on this anniversary, courtesy of our own John Minow.
I was sitting in the hatch of my tank, just trying to see what it looked like up to where we'd be landing. But we couldn't see a thing. It was too dark and foggy. There was lots of smoke in the air, and it wasn't until we got close to the beach that we started seeing yellow bursts in the low sky. There was so much noise, you couldn't believe it. They took us to where we were supposed to land, but they wouldn't let us off. There were too many obstacles in the water. We had to wait. We were idling, going back and forth, circling around. Finally, we got the word to shove off. Well, when they let us off, they sort of dumped us sideways. I thought, what in the hell is going on? We're supposed to go straight in. But the boat was tipping so much that we went into the water all crooked. That was the only lucky thing that happened to us that day, that we didn't tip over in the water. I don't know how long we're in the water trying to get to shore, but finally, there we were on the beach and trying to move forward. There was so much wrecked stuff and troops on the beach that it was hard as hell to get across. We spread out as much as we could and started blasting away. I saw two tanks get blown up ahead of me. Then I heard, bang! Something exploded right outside our tank. We veered to the left. All of a sudden, our tank stopped. I must have been knocked out. When I got my wits about me, I thought, what in the hell just happened? I knew the motor was still running, so I looked down to see what was going on. Well, the driver's head was shot off and blood was pouring out of his neck. The assistant driver, his head was lying on its side. He was dead too. I was the only one still alive. I had to go down and pull them out so I could get into the driver's seat. I didn't really know where I was going, but I did know that if I sat there, I was done for. If there was anything on the beach and it wasn't moving, the Germans would find you with their artillery up on the hill and blow you all to hell. I headed right across the beach, just beat it for the cliffs. There was a hole in the wall and everybody started going through it. Of course, by now, all the Germans were zeroing in on that gap too. All I know is that I was heading straight for it when I came to a hard stop. I'd sunk into a deep shell hole. I don't know if I fell asleep or passed out again or what happened. When I woke up, somebody was pounding on the top of the turret. I didn't know who it was, so I drew two guns, a .45 automatic and a burp gun. I aimed them both right at the hatch. Finally, it opened, and I almost shot the guy. It was one of our infantrymen. I think I hugged the hell out of him. The GI asked, "Does your tank still run?" I said, "I don't know, but I'll give it a try." I started up. It still ran. I had a hell of a time backing out of there, but I finally got out of the hole, ran over a whole bunch of junk and stuff, and got the hell off that beach. The tank kept getting hit with small arms fire. It sounded like you were in a greenhouse and it was raining pebbles. Once I got on top of the hill, they put a new crew together for me of guys whose tanks had been knocked out. I had to get the radio and report back. I had a hell of a time doing it. For one thing, I couldn't get a hold of any of our officers. I didn't know if they were dead or what happened. For another thing, I could barely talk. I was still so shook up. I don't know how I get up the hill. I just don't know. I do know that I was scared as hell. I finally got a hold of somebody. It was an Air Corps officer. He said he could see us on the ground and that the Germans were up ahead of us, but were pulling back. So we got everybody together and went into our first small French town. Going across that beach was the worst nightmare I can imagine. I remember seeing three or four guys with their stomachs shut up, trying to hold everything in while crawling along on their hands and knees. I saw guys with their arms blown off just staggering around, walking around the beach like they were in a daze. It was just a bloody assassination. That's what it was, an honest to God assassination. Dale Rammel, Green Bay, Tank Commander, Omaha Beach.
The story of Dale Rammel of Green Bay, as told by John Mino here at Civic Media of WGBW Green Bay, WISS, Oshkosh Air Support. You can hear John Mino along with Mayor Jim Schmidt on Mino and the Mayor every morning from 6 until 9. Remarkable work by our own John Mino, the research. And again, what you just heard was not fiction. It was not exaggeration. Mino sat down and just talked and listened to these guys, World War II veterans, over the course of time who were there on D-Day 80 years ago. And what you just heard was a first-person telling of what really happened. And I think it's so well done, and it takes a lot of research and dedication on Mino's part to get it right, to be accurate, and to tell these stories. And as you listen to that, just listening, some of that's kind of hard to stomach, quite frankly. It's
very sobering.
Yes, very sobering. And it's a great reminder, as they say, war is hell. And it's not pretty. And there's nothing glorious about being in it in the moment if you listen to veterans like this. But what these brave Americans did along with the Allies at Normandy 80 years ago on D-Day should never be forgotten. And it is appropriate that we take an hour out of our year to sit and remember and listen to these important stories. Come back, one more segment of our special 80th anniversary D-Day edition. This is the Todd Allball Show, and this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
The This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
It's official. Governor Tony Evers proclaims this June is Pride Month in Wisconsin. But did you know the state has a long history of activism alongside LGBTQ plus communities and allies? The Civic Media Radio Network supports the impact and celebrations and is sharing thoughtful stories all month long.
If you dig into the history of the LGBTQ plus movement in our state, you may be surprised by what you find. The first public call to get rid of restrictions against gay people was discussed by Wisconsin officials in 1966, not long after voters elect several openly gay leaders for the first time. But a 1982 law stands out as Wisconsin becomes the first state to prohibit discrimination in employment, housing, and public accommodations on the basis of sexual orientation. An extraordinary history of Wisconsin pride. I'm Terry Barr.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Matt and Air on Air.
Welcome back to the Town Hall Ball Show on this 80th anniversary of D-Day here at the Civic Media Radio Network as we pause, remember, reflect, and commemorate all those American heroes and allied heroes around the world who put their country and democracy before themselves. And listening to these stories put together by John Mino, and again, Mr. Zalmers, correct me if I'm wrong, but we'll have links or at least how you can get to John Mino's books on this and that sort of thing on the show page if people want to check it out.
Yes, it'll be in the description for the podcast, which if you're looking for it afterwards, will be titled Stories from D-Day, the 80th Anniversary.
Great, great job. I appreciate all your hard work on that. And as we say, thanks, many, many thanks to our colleague and friend, John Mino, co-host of Mino and the Mayor every morning, 6 until 9 on WGBW, WISS, and Green Bay, Oshkosh, respectively, to make sure that we never forget what happened 80 years ago. I wanted to take just part of a clip, and CNN's Jake Tapper retweeted this today. And it makes me realize at 54, I guess, in a way, how old I am, because I remember this. It was 40 years ago, at the 40th anniversary of D-Day in Normandy, France, when then Ronald Reagan, we played President Biden's remarks at the top of the show. I want to play just a snippet of President Ronald Reagan's remarks from 40 years ago at the 40th anniversary of D-Day in Normandy.
We're here to mark that day in history when the Allied armies joined in battle to reclaim this continent to liberty. For four long years, much of Europe had been under a terrible shadow. Free nations had fallen. Jews cried out in the camps. Millions cried out for liberation. Europe was enslaved and the world prayed for its rescue. Here in Normandy, the rescue began. Here, the Allies stood and fought against tyranny in a giant undertaking unparalleled in human history. We stand on a lonely, windswept point on the northern shore of France. The air is soft, but 40 years ago at this moment, the air was dense with smoke and the cries of men, and the air was filled with the crack of rifle fire and the roar of cannon. At dawn on the morning of the 6th of June, 1944, 225 Rangers jumped off the British landing craft and ran to the bottom of these cliffs. Their mission was one of the most difficult and daring of the invasion, to climb these sheer and desolate cliffs and take out the enemy guns. The Allies had been told that some of the mightiest of these guns were here, and they would be trained on the beaches to stop the Allied advance. The Rangers looked up and saw the enemy soldiers, the edge of the cliffs, shooting down at them with machine guns and throwing grenades. And the American Rangers began to climb. They shot rope ladders over the face of these cliffs and began to pull themselves up. When one Ranger fell, another would take his place. When one rope was cut, a Ranger would grab another and begin his climb again. They climbed, shot back, and held their footing. Soon, one by one, The Rangers pulled themselves over the top, and in seizing the firm land at the top of these cliffs, they began to seize back the continent of Europe.
The former President of the United States, Ronald Reagan, from the 40th anniversary of D-Day 40 years ago. Now here on this 80th anniversary, I want to end this special hour with the incomparable late, great Andy Rooney of CBS's 60 Minutes, himself a World War II veteran.
Because it was part of my life, I'd like to say something about D-Day. I don't know how to say it any differently than I did in a book I wrote called My War. If you are young and not really clear what D-Day was, let me tell you, it was a day unlike any other. There have only been a handful of days since the beginning of time on which the direction the world was taking has been changed for the better in one 24-hour period by an act of man. June 6, 1944 was one of them. What the Americans, the British, and the Canadians were trying to do was get back a whole continent that had been taken from its rightful owners by Adolf Hitler's German army. It was one of the most monumentally unselfish things one group of people ever did for another. We all have days of our lives that stand out from the blur of days that have gone by, and the day I came ashore on Utah Beach, 4 days after the initial invasion, is one of mine. As we approached the French coast, there were small clouds of smoke and sudden eruptions as German artillery blindly lobbed shells over the hills behind the beach. They were hoping to hit U.S. troops or some of the massive amount of equipment piled up on the shore there. Row on row of dead American soldiers were laid out on the beach just above the high tide mark where it turned into weedy clumps of grass. They were covered with olive drab blankets, just their feet sticking out at the bottom, their GI boots sticking out. I remember their boots, all the same on boys, all so different. No one can tell the whole story of D-Day because no one knows it. Each of the 60,000 men who waded ashore that day knew a little part of the story too well. To them, the landing looked like a catastrophe. Each knew a friend shot through the throat, shot through a knee. Each knew names of five hanging dead on the barbed wire in the water 20 yards offshore. Three who lay unattended on the stony beach as the blood drained from holes in their bodies. They saw whole tank crews drowned when the tanks rumbled off the ramps of their landing craft and dropped into 20 feet of water. There were heroes here no one will ever know because they're dead. The heroism of others is known only to themselves. Across the channel, in Allied headquarters in England, the war directors, remote from the details of death, were exultant. They saw no blood, no dead, no dying. From the statistician's point of view, the invasion was a success. Statisticians were right. They always are. That's the damn thing about it. On each visit to the beaches over the years, I've wept. It's impossible to keep back the tears as you look across the rows of markers and think of the boys under them who died that day. Even if you didn't know anyone who died, your heart knows something that your brain does not. You weep. If you think the world is selfish and rotten, go to the cemetery at Colville-sur-Mer, overlooking Omaha Beach. See what one group of men did for another on D-Day, June 6, 1944.
The late, great broadcaster, commentator, Andy Rooney of CBS's 60 Minutes. Can't say it any better than Andy Rooney. He was there. He was a part of it in World War II. I'll simply add, as someone who did not serve, I've talked about it on this program before. I don't have a lot of regrets in my life, but one of them is that I did not voluntarily sign up and spend time in the active military, but had the honor and the privilege to know many, to work with many in my time in politics. And to Andy Rooney's point, if you ever doubt the resolve of America, if you ever doubt the unselfishness of what it means to be an American, visit a veteran cemetery. Or better yet, watch a broadcast today from Normandy and think about all of those who sacrificed everything for each of us. Back from hour two, this concludes our D-Day 80th anniversary commemorative on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to The Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH. Crude and Dom.
Tune in to the next Devil's Advocates radio show. We'll have highbrow conversations about Karen Alito's tramp stamps and other topics of daily import.
The Devil's Advocates, weekdays 4 till 6.
Looking for a roundup of the day's important headlines in quick podcast format? Search no more. Find it now on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com, Your news just for the Superior area. I'm James Kelly with WBZH News.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward,
and always streaming